Good morning. I'll call the meeting of the Ag Committee to order. Meeting that will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. The roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
All right. Chair Sundin is present. Vice Chair Vang, excused. Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle present.
Representative Eklund.
Present.
Representative Hansen R.
Hansen R. present.
Representative Hansen J. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn present.
Representative Lippert.
Lippert present.
Representative Lewick.
Lewick present.
Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Thompson. We do have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. We have the minutes of the previous meeting in front of us. Representative Anderson, what is your preference on the minutes?
Let's move them, Mr. Chair.
All right. Those minutes have been moved. Are there any questions or concerns? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, that motion prevails. Minutes are adopted. Just a quick overview. This is pesticide insecticide day. We have 20 minutes blocked for each bill. We'll hear the presentations, take testimony, take a bit of time for questions, and then lay each of them over. There's lots of testimony, so it will be important to stay on track. 2-minute time limits, and if you can be more concise, it would be appreciated. I don't want to cut people off, but I will so we can hear from everyone. We had more interest in testimony than time available. We took as many people as we thought would time would allow. Others were invited to submit written testimony. Representative Morrison had to be in another committee, so at the beginning we'll call on Representative Hansen and then revert to her bill when she is available. Representative Hansen, there's a little mix-up in the agenda, a little change-up. Representative Hansen, let's start with House File 1450. Additional seed label information required. Please move your bill and begin, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1450 is for shorthand the dicamba bill, and I would move House File 1450 be considered to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, we've heard your motion. You have an author's amendment, I understand. You want to talk about that first?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. I would move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
Okay, any questions to the DE1 that is before us? Comments on that, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE1 amendment is in response to both the fiscal note and input I received from the introduction of the bill until today. This provides money for instead of compensation, the additional fee on dicamba active ingredients would not generate enough dollars to provide for compensation. But what this fee would do is actually provide for an investigative account to assist the Department of Agriculture in covering the costs related to investigations to assist farmers in providing for compensation.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. DE1 amendment is before us. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. There be no further amendments submitted. Chair Hansen, please continue with your bill as amended, and then we'll begin testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The 1450 as amended, I think, is a good bill. It's a pro-farmer bill. It takes into account kind of the precedent that was set in the Groundwater Protection Act of 1989, where when there are problems that they are paid for by the manufacturer rather than the general public. Dicamba has been a problem since 2017. So 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020, and now we are going into the fifth growing season. And if you look on the Department of Ag's website, you will see activities that have occurred, the number of complaints, the number of issues. The department has responded with label changes, but as long as this product is continuing to be used, there are continuing to be problems. So this bill, the purpose for the bill is for the product to pay for the problems. I'd ask for your support. I know there are testifiers.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Chair Hansen. Please, with your bill as amended, we can hear testimony from your first testifier. Please introduce yourself for the tape and continue with your testimony, Stephen Thumford. Mr. Thumford. Okay. We can shuffle testifiers. Mr. Thumford, last call. About Darren Macbeth, Crop Life America.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Darren Macbeth, and I'm representing Crop Life America. House File 1450, as amended, establishes a new dicamba investigation account and would require the Department of Agriculture to investigate alleged misuse of dicamba pesticide products, something the department is already required to do. The bill would also assess a new tax farmers would pay on dicamba pesticide products equal to almost double the current gross sales fee on agriculture pesticides. Dicamba products are registered for use in Minnesota by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and were renewed with additional provisions, as the author said, from the Minnesota Department of Agriculture this past year and the year before. Dicamba weed control products serve as an important tool for Minnesota farmers facing weed resistance and needing herbicide-tolerant technologies. For the legislature to single out one category of chemistry, dicamba in this case, by doubling the tax on what farmers pay to use the products and then establish a new investigative account for an authority the department already has is completely unnecessary. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is Mr. Thumford available yet?
Okay, Mr. Chair, he's not on.
Okay, let's move to Aaron Rupp, Pollinator, Minnesota, please. Identify yourself.
Hi.
And proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. I'm speaking in support of House File 1450. My daughter's right here, too. I run Pollinate Minnesota. I keep around 25 honeybee colonies. Lori Cox and Steve Tonsford, I think they both have written testimony, speak to the damage dicamba causes to farmer crops and the ecosystem as a whole because it volatilizes. Dicamba damaged leaves cause stressed plants to produce less nectar. We're talking about this because the EPA's registration process continues to allow dicamba use. It's hard to summarize the EPA history with this chemistry and pesticide registration in general in 2 minutes, and I'm trying to do so. Folks testifying in opposition to this bill will likely state that the EPA and MDA are based. Pesticide registrations are based on sound science, yet the EPA granted in 2016 this highly volatile chemistry conditional registration. Also, the EPA's definition of drift excludes volatilization. So not only are these products being used and causing damage legally, the mechanism we're given as the public to provide feedback on pesticide registrations doesn't even include the means that dicamba spreads by because it occurs days after the application, cannot be fully controlled by the applicator. Having a system that leaves out complicated drift concerns from scientific consideration just because they're complicated is not sound science. It's hard to develop experiments on, for sure. And as the number of complaints made clear, the unknowns are absolutely significant here and are, because of their nature, also unfortunately significantly underreported. We need your help to reform the system in Minnesota and nationally. And in the meantime, dicamba use will cause dicamba damage this season. And farmers, and beekeepers and conservationists need support now. I voice my support for House File 1450. And in reference, there's a 2020 report from the National Wildlife Federation, Prairie Rivers Network, and Xerxes Society, Drifting Towards Disaster, How Dicamba Herbicides Are Harming Cultivated and Wild Landscapes, that I'll share with the committee. Thank you.
Thank you for weighing in on the issue. Next up, we have Mr. Bill Bond. Please identify yourself for the record and continue with your testimony. Mr. Bond.
There, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
Please continue, Mr. Bond.
My apologies. I'm Bill Bond, Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers Trade Association, representing the agronomy departments of most co-ops in Minnesota and the Certified Crop Advisors. We will just make this one comment and we'll defer to Darren. We are a subsidiary of CropLife America at the state level, and we have a board member that will also be speaking. We are also noting that the committee has also heard a bill that would increase the pesticide sales fee by 64%. Just want to remind the committee that this would be an additional fee on top of that one if this passes as it is. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bond. Next up, we have Mr. Tristan Wilmes. Please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tristan Wilmes. I'm the Vice President of Agronomy at Central Farm Service in South Central Minnesota, a full-service ag retail co-op serving Minnesota and Iowa. I've been on the Crop Production Retailers Association board since 2015. I testify to oppose the dicamba. Dicamba has been around for years, if not decades, and adding additional fees to this is only going to, at a time when growers haven't been very profitable, just hinders the growers more, driving more consolidation at the grower level. And the EPA and the MDA have both approved the use of this and just recently did this last fall. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmes. Reverting back to Stephen Thumford, is he not available?
Mr. Chair, I don't see him on the call.
Okay, thank you very much. That concludes the testimony then. In addition to the testifiers, Larry Cox of Roots Return Heritage Farm submitted written testimony. Any questions for these witnesses or the author? We have a few minutes. Please, to the committee, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Okay, somebody's
talking. Hands.
Okay, Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Question for Representative Hansen. I will agree that there have been a number of dicamba complaints filed in the state the last couple of years. In fact, I had one myself a couple of years ago, a small claim, at least a small incident, I should say. And it's interesting to me that we've had a lot of these claims, but do you have any record of any actual yield damage losses resulting from those claims, Representative Hansen?
Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, I would defer to the Department of Ag on that, but you know that usually when there's an investigation, it's to determine whether there has been damage and not to determine compensation or loss. What this bill would do is put some teeth into that investigation, and I think would provide greater assistance on that. The department doesn't get involved in the actual insurance compensation to date.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the department that would like to respond to Representative Anderson?
Chair, members of the committee, Josh Stamper, our Pesticide for Life Management Division Director, is online. Josh, do you have the answer?
Please. Go ahead, Ms. Place.
Chair Sundin, my name is Josh.
Thank you.
I'm the division director for the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division. With regard to our investigations, the charge to the MDA is to specifically find out whether or not the pesticide misuse allegations that a complainant would report. Our role is to determine whether or not they followed the label. And that is the extent of our role within the investigations. It is not to determine yield. And it is not necessarily to determine necessarily the extent of the damage. In a regulatory process, at the end of our investigation, that's where, you know, an insurance adjuster would be engaged.
Thank you. I'd like to get to Representative Lippert, and if we have time, we'll come back to Representative Anderson, if that's okay. Representative Lippert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Hansen, for bringing this forward. So just a comment and then a question for Mr. Stamper as well. I just had a conversation with a farmer recently who had a dicamba drift issue, and his concern was that more needs to be done to protect farmers like him who don't want to plant dicamba beans and feel like their rights to do that are being infringed upon and don't feel like they have recourse available to them. So I appreciate this bill coming forward. But in this particular incident, and this is a question for Mr. Stamper, the neighbor was found to have used an illegal mix and was charged $500 as far as a fee was concerned. This farmer didn't feel like that was sufficient to keep this neighbor from doing that again. It just felt like a really small slap on the wrist. I'm curious if you can talk about how, like, what your parameters are for setting fees in these incidents when there's a complaint and there's someone is found to have done something wrong.
Mr. Stamper, would you please respond? Take a minute to respond.
Chair Sundin, Representative Lippert. That's an excellent question. When it comes to the enforcement actions, that takes into account several different factors of gravity, which I don't really have the time to get into here, but a lot of it does pertain to, were there previous offenses? Was there an economic incentive in the violation of the misuse? And were there conditions where there was human endangerment? Those are some of the factors that go into the dollar amount and the enforcement actions. I can tell you that within my time within the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, we have issued enforcement actions into the tens of thousands of dollars for repeat violations. We don't have a lot of repeat violations. Usually everybody straightens up and flies right after they have one of these incidents, but it does happen.
Thank you, Mr. Stamper. Representative Anderson, please continue with your thoughts.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. I had a question for Mr. Stamper, too, if he'd still hang on to the line. Mr. Stamper, since the purpose of this bill has really changed from being more of an indemnity fund to a fund for use by the department, is this something you think is necessary in light of the fact that you've already implemented much stringent, more stringent regulations with the EPA label coming up for the crop year 2021, is this something that you've asked for and do you think you need it, this additional funding?
Mr. Stamper, please.
Chair Sundin, Representative Anderson. When it comes to this bill, this has been, dicamba has been incredibly disruptive. I personally have not asked for this bill language. I can't speak to the role that the commissioner has played in the development of policy. My goal and the goal of the Pesticide and Fertilizer Management Division is to get everybody to follow the label. And until we can get everybody to follow the label, my concern is that this technology will continue to be problematic.
Okay. Representative Anderson, last thought, please.
Thanks again to Mr. Stamper, asking your opinion if you feel the new regulations put in place by your department now for the 2021 season will have a positive impact on the application of dicamba here in Minnesota.
Mr. Stamper.
Chair Sundin, Representative Anderson. I'm extremely hopeful that if we can get everybody to talk to their neighbors about how they intend to use herbicides and to follow the labels to the fullest extent of the law, we're going to have a positive impact on that. I can't say that it's going to fix all the problems, but we've been really focused on making sure that everyone knows what the expectations are and that if they don't follow those rules and regulations, it could get expensive very quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Stamper. To the author, any closing thoughts before we lay this over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to members. We're now on the fifth year, again, the fifth growing season as Mr. Stamper noted, of a very disruptive chemical that has disrupted the regulatory system here and in many, many other states. I think if you just search for dicamba, you'll see the journey that multiple states have taken over the last 4 to 5 years. I should note that in 2019, the gross sales of dicamba active ingredients in the state of Minnesota were $14.5 million. One active ingredient, $14.5 million, 1%, $145,000. So when the testifiers were discussing the fee increases, it would raise $145,000 that could pay for the investigation and the regulatory oversight that is needed for this disruptive chemical. I'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 1450 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus ag finance bill. Thank you all. House File 1450 as amended is laid over. Second up, we have House File 766. Representative Hansen, additional seed label information required, certain seed use prohibited, and product stewardship required for corn and soybean seed coated or treated with neonicotinoid pesticide. Mr. Chair Hansen, to your House File 766.
I would move the House File 766 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Okay. Do you have an amendment for that as well?
Yes, I do. And that would be, I've got multiple bills here, Mr. Chair. So
if you give that would be the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment, I would move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like.
Okay. All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. No other amendments were submitted. Chair Hansen, please continue with the bill as amended, and we'll begin testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House File 766 deals with a regulatory challenge that is related to treated seed. And this challenge became apparent in the past few months with the disposal of treated seed, unused treated seed, in Mead, Nebraska at an ethanol plant, where seed from around the Midwest, including Minnesota, went to that plant for quote-unquote disposal. What this exposed is a challenge in the regulatory framework relating to seeds, waste, and treated seeds. So the department's regulatory authority is under the pesticide law, ends when the pesticide is applied to the seed. The department's authority under the seed law ends when the seed is planted. When does untreated seed become waste? When does a half full bag or half full container of treated seed, is that solid waste? Is it unused product? Who is responsible for that? So the Extension Service provides guidance, and the pesticide label may provide instruction. But what if you are the retailer selling the seed? What's your responsibility if you have unsold seed that has been treated? What do you do with that? The guidance provides from Extension was to plant it, but that's a lot of seed. What if you are the manufacturer of the seed, the person who does the application? What do you do with the untreated seed? And so what this bill does is it provides, looks at the model of producer responsibility that we have used elsewhere in Minnesota state law for decades. Used tires, waste oil, batteries, electronics, that the person who makes the treated seed needs to take it back and be responsible for disposal. What the amendment did that was added provides in law the instruction that was provided in guidance, that you do not burn the seed. You do not use it for heating. You do not compost it. So that those uses would now become illegal, not just guidance or instruction. And that is the bill that is in front of us, and there are multiple testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. First up for testifiers, I have Mac Earnhardt. Would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Sure. Thank you, Chairman Sundin, and thank you to the other members of the committee. My name is Mac Earnhardt. I'm part owner and president of Albert Lee Seed, based in Albert Lee, Minnesota. We're a family-owned company. We've got around 40 employees. In 2020, we had 5,000 farmer customers. We contract grow, clean, and sell conventional seed and also certified organic seed to farmers in 48 states. A portion of the conventional seed corn that we sell is treated with the insecticides, often referred to as neonicotinoids, and we were one of the companies that was shipping our out-of-condition treated seed to the All-10 plant in Mead, Nebraska. This plant is now under investigation for improper disposal of ethanol byproducts that contained high levels of neonicotinoids. Having read HF 6766, I'm not certain that this bill is the correct path forward in, as it stands now, but I do absolutely support the concept that companies that treat seed with neonicotinoids should be held responsible for the safe disposal of seed that does not get planted. And I'm also here to say that right now, it's not easy to discover how this seed should be safely disposed of. So I reached out to the company that manufactures and sells the insecticide that's used on our conventional seed corn. They referred me to the American Seed Trade Association's Guide to Seed Treatment Stewardship. And this guide puts the burden of stewardship back onto the seed companies to discover with their state departments of ag and pollution control. I've been in contact with the Minnesota Department of Ag, and it's their understanding that they do not have any regulatory jurisdiction over treated seed. According to them, FIFRA, the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, considers treated seed as a treated article and therefore is not subject to FIFRA or MDA pesticide regulations. So I'm now working with the MPCA to determine the best course of action. In closing, I'd like to say that seed companies do need help identifying a clear path forward to safely dispose of out-of-condition treated seed. And it's my belief that ignoring this problem is irresponsible and could eventually lead to a situation such as the one in Mead, Nebraska.
Thank you, Mr. Earnhardt. Next up, we have Kristen Wilmes again. Please identify yourself and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tristan Wilmes. I work for Central Farm Service in South Central Minnesota, full service ag co-op, serving Minnesota and Iowa, and on the Crop Protection Retailer Association Board since 2015. As it stands today, we sell treated seed, we treat seed, and any seed we purchase to sell to growers that are treated, that growers don't use, we return back to the manufacturers. And any seed that we treat ourselves, we don't treat until the grower is committed to planting it. So I don't see how adding additional labeling is going to solve this problem. And and any treated seed we have today, when we treat it, we put a colorant on it to avoid it going into the wrong channels. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Next up, we have Dr. Judy Wu Smart. Please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, thank you. My name is Dr. Judy Wu Smart. I'm an assistant professor at the Extension Specialist and Extension Specialist at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. And I'm testifying today as in a neutral capacity, on my own personal capacity, not as a representative of the university. I am the director of the University Bee Lab in Nebraska, where we typically manage 60 to 85 honeybee colonies each year across a dozen research and teaching apiaries. We've had consistent losses and zero survivability of bees since 2017, only in one location in Mead, Nebraska. And my testimony today is highlighting some critical challenges we're facing, trying to understand the environmental contamination issues as well as ecological impacts, specifically systemic pesticides, such as the neonicotinoids that we were talking about, as well as many different fungicides can translocate to all parts of the treated plant, including the roots, making them very popular chemical options for seed coat dressings. However, the systemic action of these compounds can increase the risk of leaching and off-target movement. So the residues in the contaminated water and soil may be picked up by nearby vegetation, expressed in the leaves, nectar, and pollen, where bees and other wildlife may become exposed. So currently, monitoring and mitigation efforts in water, soil, and air, which are separately regulated, are not fully considering the systemic movement of these pesticides across the different matrices and the uptake of the residues in nearby vegetation. So further, we've been unable to receive any state or federal assistance to investigate the losses because these losses fall under a regulatory gray area. And the lack of information regarding the volume of treated seeds processed in this manner hinders our ability to fully understand the extent of the contamination issues, as well as the potential long-term ecological ramifications. So while this is an isolated case, they have been processing 98% of all treated outdated seed in North America. So consider that just for a moment. Now that they're closed, this treated seed disposal issue becomes a national environmental and agricultural challenge that I think HF 766 begins to address. So I thank you, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you for your contribution today. Next up, we have Mr. Bill Bond. Please identify yourself and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Bond, Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. I would draw your attention to the statement made by the Minnesota Corn Growers Association pointing out the benefits of this seed treatment. It has a very powerful and strong effect in providing a crop protection tool that reduces the number of seeds per acre that are required, and this allows farmers to manage their expense. We also work with the Department of Agriculture and the University of Minnesota Extension to provide a specific training in Minneapolis each year in December to over 1,000 attendees, and we're providing critical information on this very important topic of the seed treatment. Thank you.
Thanks again, Mr. Bond. Next up, we have Sarah Hoyle. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Hoyle, and I'm with the Xerces Society for Invertebrate Conservation, here today to support HF766. As a group working directly with farmers, we are well-versed in the importance of balancing pest management and conservation. North America's wild pollinators are facing precipitous declines. Roughly 17% of butterflies and 28% of bumblebee species are at risk of extinction. HF766 would add a caution statement to neonicotinoid-treated seed labels noting their risk to pollinators. Neonicotinoid insecticides, or neonics, are a priority concern for pollinators because they are long-lived, highly toxic, and systemic. They're also very prevalent in our landscape as they're applied to the vast majority of corn and soybean seed planted. Despite treated seeds' widespread use, as a few other testifiers have noted, it's actually exempted from federal pesticide regulations through a loophole. There are numerous exposure pathways for pollinators from treated seed, now including their quote-unquote disposal in ethanol plants. In response to the severe pesticide contamination at an ethanol plant in Nebraska that processes treated seed, HF766 prohibits the use of neonic treated seed in ethanol production. Neonics can harm invertebrates at levels as low as one part per billion, but have been found in the plant's contaminated wastewater and distiller's grain at up to 554,000 parts per billion. Because treated seed is exempted from federal pesticide regulation, a similar situation could arise in Minnesota if this activity is not expressly prohibited. HF766 does just that and also calls for the seed industry to create a product stewardship program. Current industry guides still include ethanol processing as a recommended means of disposal for excess treated seed. A stewardship program would help ensure that excess treated seed is handled appropriately without placing an additional burden on farmers or seed dealers. Similar programs have been implemented successfully in the state and other areas to deal with other challenging waste, including electronic waste. Unfortunately, the impacts of neonic treated seed can extend far beyond its use in fields, and there are heavy costs from the growing trend of planting seeds coated with insecticides. HF766 is a small but really critical step forward to reduce the risk that treated seed can pose to pollinators and communities across Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution, Sarah Hoyle. Next up, we have Darren McBeth. Please identify yourself and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Darren McBeth, representing CropLife America. This bill and the testimony we've heard involves at least three major compounded issues, starting with a bad actor of an ethanol plant disposing of treated seed in Mead, Nebraska, who's facing indictment by the state attorney general and others. The treated seed issue more broadly is a complex one and one I want to address. And then seeds treated with neonicotinoids and neonicotinoids themselves being implicated here by testimony and other misinformation that I also want to address. Seed treatments are an important tool that provide farmers with an economical means of protecting seeds and seedlings against early season insect pests and diseases. Seed treatment technology reduces potential risk to the environment by placing microscopic amounts of pesticide on a seed coating rather than causing farmers to have to apply foliar sprays to the entire field. Seed treatments are highly regulated, just as foliar and soil applied pesticides are. Seed treatment products undergo a thorough evaluation by US EPA and the applicable state agencies prior to commercialization. FIFRA allows products that are treated with registered and approved technologies to continue to be treated as the product existed prior to the application of the technology, and this is known as the treated article exemption. It's a misnomer, not as you've heard, because it's not an exemption from regulation. All pesticide-treated seeds are registered as a treated article if all three of the following characteristics are present. The article contains or is treated with a pesticide, the pesticide is intended to protect the article itself, and the pesticide is registered for that use or pest control. I see with a 30-second warning I need to wrap up, and I'd like to get to a little more information on neonics or neonicotinoids. I'll either stop there or, with the chairman's permission, go into one paragraph of testimony on neonics.
We're running close on time here. If we have time, you are the last one. Can you submit that in writing to the committee, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Any further comments? Thank you very much. Okay. That's it for testifiers. There's a quite a little bit of written testimony or written information offered to the committee. Please take a look at that as it comes across your mail. So there was a fiscal note that was completed, and it showed a fiscal impact to the Ag Fund in the next biennium. So expect a revised note should there be an amendment. Seeing no further discussion, any questions are off to the witnesses or authors? We have just a couple minutes. Representative Lewick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, first of all, this is a question, I guess, for Department of Ag, or I don't know if MPCA is here. Is there any provision or permit or allowance for any ethanol plant in the state of Minnesota to use treated seed as feedstock for what they're doing?
Anyone from the department wish to weigh in on that? Please.
Mr. Chair, this is Whitney Place, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Whitney Place, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as we know, there are no restrictions on this. You know, it's tough to say if anyone actually is doing this in practice in Minnesota, but, you know, it's not in law that there's anything against doing it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lux.
Certainly, I'd like to hear Mr. Bond comment on that. I'm not aware of that any of our plants and their permits allow anything like that, and that would get him in really big hot water, as that literally a renegade plant in Mead, Nebraska, completely went off the rails. They were so far outside of the law, it was ridiculous. But anyway, Mr. Bond might be able to shed a little more light on that.
Mr. Bond, like to shed some light on the issue? Mr. Bond, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Look, it's my understanding that that does not occur at all in Minnesota, at any of the plants. And furthermore, it would be outside our practice to do that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bond. We have Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, again. I would concur that that's not done in Minnesota. If it were allowed, why would they ship it to Nebraska to do it? We have very stringent air permits on our ethanol plants, and the production of DDGs, very tight regulations as to substances in those DDGs that are used for livestock feed. So I think it's safe to say, is not done here in Minnesota. Just a question for the chair. What is the route of this bill, Mr. Chair?
This is this will be laid over for possible inclusion in the bill, in the omnibus ag finance bill.
Mr. Chair, even if it requires rulemaking, as the amendment suggests?
I could not comment on that. I haven't discussed that with the committee administrator. I'd like to weigh in on this.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, there is no mandatory re-referral under the new rules, and I would have to check my notes, but I think that I checked with the committee staff for state government to see if they needed the bill, and they indicated no, but I'll double check on that.
Okay. Thank you. Anything further, Representative Anderson?
No, that's a bit surprising, but no further questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. To Representative Hansen, let's be mindful of our time, so we don't want to cheat you on time for your next bill. So
thank you.
Any further comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be quick. The rulemaking is in there because we need to have a regulatory framework, as was testified by the seed company and by the Department of Ag. There is a regulatory hole here, and that regulatory hole leads to problems in that system. I want to note for the section in the bill on the caution statement that I'm fully aware of what label and labeling are, as I used to run the certification and training programs that were referenced by some of the industry back before I became a legislator. And so the intent on that is that it would be like a cigarette label, that it provides information only. It is not labeling. The cigarette notification on a box of cigarettes says this may be harmful to your health. This provides notification to the farmers. So that is providing information. The rulemaking that is done by the Department of Agriculture in conjunction with the PCA and experts at the University of Minnesota would provide a reasonable path for information in getting this regulatory hole fixed. I should note for the record that Mr. Macbeth represents the companies that make the products. Mr. Bond represents the companies that sell the products. They do not represent the ethanol industry. You've heard compelling testimony from the seed company, and you've heard compelling testimony from a researcher who incidentally got her PhD at the University of Minnesota. We're dealing with a waste issue here. And just like with nuclear waste, where people like the energy but don't know how to dispose of the nuclear waste, people like the product but don't know how to dispose of this waste. And we have to find a solution, and House File 76 does that.
Well, thank you. Chair Hansen renews his motion that House File 766 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. Thank you all for your discussion. And the bill is laid over. Next up, we have House File 408. It's a Hansen bill regarding pollinator lethal insecticides and pollinator research. We have a hard stop here, just the 205. So this bill is to ensure that Representative Morrison gets a chance to present her bill, and we have time for discussion. So House File 408. Chair Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would move House File 408 be held over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
You have amendments?
Yes, I would move the DE amendment. This clarifies the registration fee. Again, we had heard or had received a fiscal note, and there were costs involved in determining pollinator lethal. So the changes that are made here are based on active ingredient that will reduce the cost for the determination of the fee for the Department of Agriculture.
My understanding is you have an amendment to that amendment.
Yes, and I would move the A, it's the A1 amendment.
That has been moved in the, wait a second, let me get this straight here. A1, explain that, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the A1 amendment, recently there were issues raised about flea and pet collars that were neonicotinoid-based. What this does is provides that was a bill was introduced and adds that into this bill. The precedent and their germaneness is the neonicotinoid pesticide provides $250,000 in general fund for the Department of Ag to work with the Board of Animal Health in determining the extent of that damage. And I would move the A1 amendment.
Okay, the A1 amendment to the DE2 amendment is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. The DE2 as amended is before us. You want to go ahead with the DE2 amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, the DE amendment as amended, again, provides changes to the how the fee would be determined. And I should note that it is temporary and going to an existing pollinator research account. So I'd ask for your support for the DE amendment. Okay.
Though all those in favor of the DE2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Okay, that motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. There's no further amendments submitted. We've heard the presentation, so we can begin with testimony. Margot Monson, please.
Thank you.
Identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Margaret Monson. I live in St. Paul. I'm an entomologist and a beekeeper. So you're hearing a lot about pollinator decline experienced by beekeepers, but also some small farmers, organic growers, backyard gardeners, and nurseries are starting to hear about it. In order for ecosystems to be strong and healthy, we have to have a high biodiversity of plants, invertebrates, birds, and other wildlife. We should be concerned. All of us should be concerned about the pollinator decline. Not only are honeybees and other pollinators responsible for one-third of the food we eat and drink, but there's 470-some species of native bees in Minnesota, and they are the glue that holds together our wild places, our forests, our prairies, our wetlands, our bogs. And we need all of them to make it possible for our environment to be diverse and sustainable. Scientists are finding that insecticides are showing up throughout our landscapes and in our waters, and there are many, many peer-reviewed papers documenting the pollinators in decline that are a result of the insecticides used. We're scrambling to try to create enough pollinator habitat where we can, but we need more funding for basic pollinator research. In understanding insect population dynamics, it's important to review baseline ecological data. This involves comparing what is present today with information documented at the university from previous studies. In addition, funding for more biocontrol research is important in finding ways to manage insect pests in order to reduce the use of those chemicals that are harming bees and other pollinators. This kind of work takes time. It's done by entomologists experienced in the taxonomy of native pollinator species. This bill has the support of the Minnesota Hobby Beekeepers Association because they also are emphasizing the importance of more research needed to further examine the negative impacts of pesticides, as well as to discover new biological controls and less toxic management of unwanted pests. Also, the Minnesota Pest Management Association has thanked Representative Hansen for his work on pollinator protection because they believe strongly in teaching and implementing best management practices in order to increase the ability that their members to safely use pesticides in a manner that does not impact pollinators. For these reasons, the Minnesota Pest Management Association supports the fee increase. You know, we really cannot live well. That is.
Thank you for your testimony. If you have further comments, please just submit them in writing to the committee.
Please support. We need
to move on.
That's all right.
John Gaeta from RISE. Please identify yourself and move along with your testimony.
Yes, sir. My name is John Gaeta, Director of State Affairs for RISE, Responsible Industry for a Sound Environment. Our industry opposes HF 408, a bill which increases registration fees on neonics and chlorpyrifos, as well as increasing the fees collected over sales above $70,000. Significant funds will be collected because of these changes, and the ultimate result will be less choices for consumers who responsibly apply pesticides to their homes and gardens. Ultimately, with such egregious fee increases, pesticide registrants will likely cut back on the number of products they register within the state. This will not change how many pesticides are applied, but just reduce the options for consumers. My understanding is these additional funds will go to the pollinator habitat and research account while expanding their scope of research to include impacts of pesticides, parasites, and climate. Significant research has been conducted on the impact of varroa mites on bees, and time after time, we continue to see reports conducted in the states and nationally that show the lethal impacts of varroa mites, what they have on pollinators. Additionally, we as an industry understand the role climate change continues to play on pollinators' access to food and forage. However, these proposed increases are not sensible and unfairly single out two broad classes of chemistry. This one-size-fits-all strategy will collect excessive fee dollars, is unfocused, and disproportionately asks pesticide registrants to fund broad research topics. We firmly oppose this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Tristan Wilmes. Please identify yourself again and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chairman and the committee, my name is Tristan Wilmes. I work for Central Farm Service in South Central Minnesota, large co-op, full-service ag retail. I oppose the 408 as well. We've heard last week of trying to increase pesticide fees across all of ag, and earlier today on dicamba fees, now another fee on neonicotinoid. Adding extra fees to growers at a time when profitability has been a struggle is just only going to drive consolidation at the grower level as the smaller growers struggle to compete with larger growers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up, we have Chris Cohen. Please identify yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Chris, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, members of the committee, for allowing me to speak today. My name is Chris Cohen. I'm a contract lobbyist with the Pesticide Action Network, and we participate with the Minnesota Environmental Partnership Pollinator Cluster. And we're joining a lot of other groups and organizations in supporting House File 408. And as Margaret mentioned, the bill has the support of groups as broad as the Minnesota Pest Management Association, Minnesota Hobby Beekeepers, a pollinator advocacy group, Humming for Bees, and the Land Stewardship Project. And I've been doing this kind of work for the past few years, and I haven't met a person yet who doesn't support pollinators. And I'm sure that's true for everybody who can hear me speaking right now. But there is a lot of work to do. And this is becoming more and more apparent that the Environmental Protection Agency, Minnesota Department of Agriculture, follow the label legal standard in the use of pesticides is causing a lot of problems to the environment across the state. And it may not relate to pollinators, but just as an example of this is the recent DNR study on deer spleens. And if any of you had a chance to see that map, it covers pretty much the entire state. So it is ubiquitous, the use of pesticides. And I think it's a wise investment to allow the smart and good folks at the University of Minnesota to delve further into this issue, to keep the research going, and to keep us informed of what the best practices are and what regulations, when needed, should be in place to keep everyone safe with the use of pesticides. So, Mr. Chair and members, I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Representative Lippert, I think Chair Sundin is frozen.
I didn't catch that.
Oh, I thought you were frozen. Sorry.
I was. I don't know who froze me. Mr. Bond, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I wanted to point out that we work very closely with the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. We've had the Bee Center representatives make numerous presentations at our gatherings where we do support the BMPs for all pesticide and crop inputs and teach them across all of the pesticide applicators that are also in training and getting their recertification at our program. So we strongly support pollinators and the research that's going on. We don't see that this additional fee is necessary, and it seems to be duplicative, and so we don't support it for that reason. Thank you.
Thank you for your contribution, Mr. Bond. Did we hear from Darren McBeth?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
Darren McBeth, CropLife America. House File 408, as amended, would modify the state's current pollinator habitat and research account, providing research to the funding to the University of Minnesota by increasing the gross sales fee on certain agricultural and non-agricultural pesticides. Crop protection companies and farmers alike, as was mentioned earlier, do support pollinator habitat, but not a tax increase on farmers to research what we already know. Instead, we support redirecting existing funds to assist farmers with the costs associated with the thousands of acres of habitat they already plant and establish at their own expense to further help bees, butterflies, and all the pollinators impacted by colony collapse disorder, Minnesota's extreme weather conditions, and poor beekeeping practices. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, committee. In addition to the testifiers, there's written testimony submitted by the Treated Wood Council, Minnesota Hobby Beekeepers, Humming for Bees, and the Minnesota Pest Management Association. To the committee, any questions or of the witnesses or the author? Representative Anderson, please.
Thanks once again, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate your indulgence. Would anybody have any information available, maybe not today, but could get it for the committee? Over the past couple of bienniums, 5 or 6 years, 4 or 5 years, how much money the legislature has provided through LCCMR grants or any other grants to the university for their work in bee research? I'd like to know what that number is, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Is there help out there? Anybody willing to provide information? Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, if you look at the account that's being changed, it was set up, it doesn't have any money in it right now. It was set up only for habitat research. So our great bee researchers at the U and pollinator research indicate that it's poor habitat, poor nutrition, parasites, and pesticides. During this pollinator protection journey the last 10 years, Minnesota has been a great leader in looking at poor habitat, parasites, and poor nutrition. But it has not been able to do great, clear research on pesticides because of the power of the pesticide lobby at the Minnesota Capitol. The account was set up, and what I'm doing in this amendment is actually adding pesticides as something that they could research. When the account was set up, it did not include pesticides. The lobby is used to getting its way. We have done a lot on habitat, poor nutrition, and parasites. It's time to look at the fourth component, which may have huge impacts. Pesticides.
Follow up, Rob, Representative Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, no, I find that interesting. And I do take a bit of exception to one of the testifiers about the smart and good folks at the university. I got the impression he thought they were smarter and better than the folks at EPA and the Department of Agriculture. We have outstanding people at the Department of Agriculture, and also I would assume at the EPA that make their decisions based on science, and I support the work they've done as well, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further questions for the witnesses or the author? Okay, there was a fiscal note completed on the bill as introduced, which reflected general fund and ag fund impact. I guess we can expect a revised note with the DE. Any further discussions? Chair Hansen, any closing comments before I lay the bill over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill, as revised, provides a look at science and research. And it uses the fee to provide that rather than the general taxpayers. I would ask for your support.
Okay. Given that, Chair Hansen renews his motion that House File 408 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. So thank you all for the discussion. House File 408 is, as amended, is laid over. Next up we have House File 670, Representative Morrison. And I understand that Representative Lippert will be presenting the bill to get things going. House File 670, Morrison, Cruciferous Sale Use and Application Ban, Product Recall and Collection Efforts Required, and Money Transferred. We'd like to get this laid over prior to 229. So, Representative Lippert, would you like to move that bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move House File 670 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill.
Okay, that bill is before us. Welcome to the committee, all. please briefly present this bill, and then we'll start taking testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Morrison isn't able to be here, but just shared some remarks, so I will share these on her behalf. Chlorpyrifos is a widely used organophosphate insecticide. It was banned from residential use in 2001 because of concerns about its impacts on fetal and child development. And House File 670 is a bill to end the use of chlorpyrifos in Minnesota. In 2011, EPA scientists were unable to find any safe level of exposure to chlorpyrifos. The scientific evidence of the neurodevelopmental harms have continued to grow since then. It's linked to a multitude of neurological effects, persistent developmental disorders, autoimmune disorders, low birth weight, lower IQ, and attention problems too. A ban in the United States was planned until the Environmental Protection Agency chose to ignore the recommendations of its own scientists in 2017 and reverse course. This decision was met with alarm and outrage by the scientific and medical communities. The American Academy of Pediatrics responded with a statement saying, "There's a wealth of science demonstrating the detrimental effects of chlorpyrifos exposure to developing fetuses, infants, children, and pregnant women. The risk to infant and children's health and development is unambiguous. It's unconscionable that we as a country are ignoring clear science and putting the health and safety of our children at risk, given the scientific consensus around the dangers of chlorpyrifos and the newfound pressures on the current administration to reinstate the previously planned ban of this pesticide. It's time for Minnesota to start planning for the future. And this is our opportunity to act on a state level to ban this dangerous neurotoxin and find better, safer, and healthier ways to grow our food supply." And that ends my remarks at this time, Mr. Chair, and I know there are testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. We have a list of testifiers here, starting with Bonnie Wirtz. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Dear House Agricultural Committee, my name is Bonnie Wirtz, and I currently live in Roseville, Minnesota. I was living in Melrose, Minnesota, when I faced the pesticide poisoning, which I will share with you now. Please listen to my story and support HS 670. My family and I were living in rural Minnesota, renting a small farm in 2012. The neighboring farm was spraying their field by plane. As it flew closer, my ex-husband and I took shelter in our house and closed all of our windows. Our son was 8 months old. Moments later, we heard the plane fly over. It sounded so close, we thought it was going to crash. Seconds passed when suddenly the room I was in began to fill with a white mist, which was coming in around the air conditioner unit. I stumbled out coughing and was having trouble breathing. My ex-husband rushed me and my infant son to the ER, and that night I fought for my life as I had been exposed to extremely high levels of chlorpyrifos, a deadly neurotoxin. After the incident, the Minnesota Department of Agriculture came out to do an inspection. The applicator was in error. The following summer, I did air monitoring with a tool called the Drift Catcher to document the levels of chlorpyrifos that my family was being exposed to. Chlorpyrifos is known for causing developmental delays and other health problems in children. Up until this point, our son had met all of his developmental milestones. Shortly after the second spray season, when my son was about 2.5, he had a regression in speech. Our family moved off the farm into the city to find answers. He would be almost 4 before he could say mama consistently after a year and a half of speech therapy. When my son was about 6 years old, he was diagnosed with ADHD and autism. The EPA has concluded there is no safe levels for exposure. I will leave you with this final thought. For families who have children with disabilities, leaving this chemical on the market for one more day is one more day too long. It is my sincere hope that Minnesota will see a complete ban on chlorpyrifos this legislative session to keep our children in Minnesota safe. Thank you for introducing this bill.
Thank you for your comments. Next up, we have Darren McBeth. Please identify yourself and continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Darren McBeth, representing CropLife America. Chlorpyrifos is a broad-spectrum insecticide registered by the EPA for use and control on a number of insect pests. Products containing chlorpyrifos are registered for over 50 agricultural uses, including fruit and vegetable crops, tree nuts, sorghum, wheat, and other food uses. There are over 60 FIFRA Section 3 registrations and over 30 FIFRA Section 24C special local need registrations for products containing chlorpyrifos. Overall usage has declined in the past decade, but increased for some specific uses such as sorghum, sweet corn, and sunflowers. House File 670, which would unilaterally ban chlorpyrifos in Minnesota only, is premature and could place Minnesota out of sync with anticipated guidance from EPA. Since its first registration in 1965, chlorpyrifos has been reviewed repeatedly by career scientists within EPA for tolerance reassessment, re-registration, and most recently as part of its ongoing registration review. The timeline published on EPA's website summarizes the work they have done to ensure that, as science and technology evolve, registered chlorpyrifos products remain safe for use. Regarding the current registration review, EPA published a proposed interim decision on the safe use of chlorpyrifos in just December of 2020. The agency proposed a 60-day comment period, which was extended to March 7th, 2021, due to the change in EPA leadership under the Biden administration. This comment period is now closed. Given the sheer number of comments EPA has to process and review, a decision is likely within the next couple of months. In summary, chlorpyrifos is safe when used according to EPA regulatory guidance and the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's added best management practices. It's authorized for use in over 100 countries. It's been subject to more than 4,000 studies and reports regarding its safety and efficacy. It's subject to stringent label restrictions. Until EPA issues its final guidance, growers and applicators in Minnesota should be allowed to use this product in accordance with label restrictions and existing state BMPs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up is Emily Marquez. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to the committee. I'm Emily Marquez. I have a PhD in biology, and I'm a staff scientist at Pesticide Action Network. I'm speaking in support of Bill HF 670 to stop using the neurotoxic pesticide chlorpyrifos. In Minnesota, through my organization, I've done air monitoring with people in rural communities where we monitor the air for evidence of pesticide drift. Bonnie Wirtz is one of our community partners who did air monitoring in Melrose the year after she was drifted on and poisoned by chlorpyrifos in her own home. When she did air monitoring at her house, she found levels of chlorpyrifos in the air that well exceeded levels of concern according to US EPA's 2016 Human Health Risk Assessment. But levels of concern is too simple a term. What exposure to chlorpyrifos really means for children is disruption of their brain development. These effects include decreased IQ scores and impaired cognitive, behavioral, and social development in children. These effects on children's brains will likely last a lifetime because the human brain doesn't have much capacity to repair itself. This is too great a consequence for us to ask people to bear in order to keep on using this dangerous pesticide. People eating produce can get exposed to chlorpyrifos through residues on their food at levels that have been shown to result in injury to the brain in developing children. Chlorpyrifos is authorized for use on nearly 50 crops, including food like fruits, vegetables, and nuts that are heavily consumed by children. In addition, chlorpyrifos residues are found regularly by USDA testing of food crops imported to the U.S. We have more than enough scientific evidence to ban chlorpyrifos and have known enough for over 20 years. It's time to ban this pesticide, and this committee can take an important step in moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you for your input. Next up, we have Bill Bond. Please identify yourself again and proceed with testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Bond, Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. I would point out that we have a board member in the Red River Valley, northwestern part of the state, who points out that should this bill go through and you ban this pesticide in our state, that the farmers that farm on the Minnesota side of the Red River would not be able to use it, while those on the North Dakota side would be free to continue using the product. Until the EPA makes its decision, this is a premature bill and decision. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your insight on that, Mr. Bond. We can move on to Deborah Bennett. Please identify yourself and offer your testimony.
Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. My name is Debbie Bennett, and I'm a professor at the University of California, Davis, Elaine Graham University. I'm representing myself here today. I'm here to express my support for eliminating the use of chlorpyrifos in Minnesota. I'll speak only in regard to my concern over the impact of exposure to chlorpyrifos during pregnancy on child neurodevelopment. Neurodevelopmental effects are seen at much lower levels of exposure than those when there's things such as poisoning that can cause a decrease in chlorinesterase, which is why it needs to be completely eliminated. There have been over 25 studies that have found exposure to organophosphate pesticides associated with poor cognitive, behavioral, and social development in children. Outcomes impacted by exposure include decreased working memory, processing speed, and IQ in elementary school-age children. Prenatal exposure has also been associated with increased risk of ADHD in multiple studies. Confidence in the relationship between exposure and outcome increases when the same adverse effects are seen in both human epidemiology studies and animal studies. While this concurrence exists, effects on cognition, motor activity, and social behaviors have been repeatedly seen in animal studies. I want to come back to the affected population, children. Children are our future. We hear this repeatedly in the news today as we express concern over getting kids back to school. The same idea applies as we think about ensuring that children born in the future in Minnesota have the opportunity to reach their full potential in terms of cognitive ability to go on to be leaders and contributors to society. I also want to touch on disparities in exposure. Farm worker populations have the highest level of exposure, while those populations that have the means to consume only organic fruits and vegetables have the lowest exposure. We need regulations that can reduce exposures to all pregnant women, regardless of race, ethnicity, and income, allowing all children to develop to their full potential. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your input. Next up, we have Tristan Romans. Please identify yourself once again and offer your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Tristan Romans. I work for Central Farm Service in South Central Minnesota, full service ag retail co-op serving Minnesota and Iowa. I oppose the 670. The EPA and the MDA have both said that when the label's followed, it's an effective and safe product to use. Eliminating this tool out of the toolbox for growers is just going to put more pressure on other active ingredients to eliminate pests and also raise concerns of pest resistance. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much once again here. Okay, in addition to the testifiers, there's written testimony submitted by Dr. Megan Horton from the Pesticide Action Network, Minnesota Farm Bureau, the Minnesota Corn Growers Association, and the Red River Valley Sugar Beet Growers Association. We have ample time for questions to the witnesses or the author. Any questions to the witnesses or the author? Chair Hansen, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask Commissioner Place a question.
Commissioner Place, are you available? Yep. Go ahead with your question, Representative Hansen, please. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner Place, we've heard a lot about the label and EPA and the good work that you've been doing. It's my understanding is that the federal government, FIFRA, is a floor of regulation, not a ceiling. Is that correct?
Commissioner Place, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, yes, it is true that states can go further than federal law as it pertains to FIFRA.
Follow up, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Place. So states can lead by putting restrictions on pesticides. They don't have to get EPA approval. They can deny registration or cancel, or the legislature can do as such. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that's correct.
Okay. Chair Hansen, follow up?
That's it for me.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Anderson, please. You might be muted there. Representative Anderson, you might be muted.
Should know that by now. Sorry, Mr. Chair. if Ms. Place would be available to answer a question again. Ms. Place, you know, the EPA came out with some rulings this during the winter, last fall, pertaining to a dicamba, and saying the federal label was basically the law, and states couldn't make changes by rulemaking, but could by legislative process. So when you answer that last question, you're saying that according to EPA, we could make state changes in the label on this chemical, for example. Is that correct?
Commissioner Place, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes, state legislators could make changes that go beyond FIFRA regulations.
Follow up for Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To your knowledge, have any other states done so? California, for example, any other states, have they gone and done this, made a tighter label registration on this chemical? To your knowledge, has that happened?
Commissioner Place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, yes. The other states that have banned chlorpyrifos in the United States include Hawaii, Maryland, New York, and Oregon. And I think there's also, you know, the European Commission discontinued chlorpyrifos use in the European Union after February of 2020.
Okay. Representative Anderson?
No further questions.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other questions for the testifier or the author, please? Okay. There's a fiscal note completed, and it showed a fiscal impact of the Ag Fund and Pesticide Regulatory Account. Seeing no further discussion, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
Representative yes. Morrison is now with us.
Oh, okay. Terrific. Representative Morrison, welcome to the committee. Thank you so much for your compelling arguments to see this bill move forward. Any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I apologize that my last bill in another committee went long, and I appreciate Representative Lippert standing in to present the bill for me. I'm very grateful for the opportunity to present the bill. I think it's time we start having this conversation in Minnesota. Chlorpyrifos has been shown to be a dangerous insecticide for developing fetuses, children, and pregnant women. So thank you for your consideration.
Terrific. Thank you. Hearing that, no further comments. Representative Lippert renews his motion that 670 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Ag Finance Bill. So thank you, Representative Morrison. Thank you, Representative Lippert and committee for keeping us on time. So hearing that, 670 as amended is laid over. We are adjourned.